It's a valuable thing, just being able to time where your next emerging market's going to be. I personally believe in boots on the ground, and find the emerging environment inside of your own market that allows you to actually have confidence out there when you're buying.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Victor! Great interview. Fantastic interview. Probably the best ones we've had in a long time. So I appreciate it. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we got the first question is from Wayne. Wayne wants to know, what are the most important factors to consider when evaluating an apartment for investment?
So that's a loaded question. So just so I'm clear, I'll give two answers to that. If you're looking to buy the property yourself, because there's investing money and then there's investing as an active. For me, number one for both of those things is the location. Like, where is my money going? Because even if you're an active guy or an active investor, you're going to be the owner operator, or you're just buying it for yourself, or you got people's money. Where that money goes is more important than the deal itself. Because you can buy a property, tear the property down, but number one thing is location. So when I'm looking at a deal, first thing I look at is, do I want my money in this location? And over the next 10 years, what do I think is going to happen here? Do I think this location, this area, this piece of the neighborhood or where it's around, is it going to push rents up without me doing anything just because this is where money's going? It's not an emerging thing. You look at it and go, cool, there's a hospital right down the street. There's Starbucks. There's a Whole Foods or a Sprouts. There's a Super Target. Like, what is happening here? And if I know that's happening, then I'll continue on with my underwriting with the actual building itself.
Perfect. Hey, Victor, this one's from Carol. She wants to know, Victor, do you ever invest in larger properties, or do you really just like the smaller 10 to 12 units?
No, actually, I only look at properties that are 80 to 120 units all the way up to 200 plus, because I have a real estate fund right now. I only show this because I think it's relevant to people either getting started, or you make a bunch of money and that could happen for anybody. So no, most of the stuff I look at right now, they're really in the 100 plus range. When people send me 10 unit deals now, 10 and 20 units, I don't even open my email, be honest with you. Because I have a real estate fund. So if you're going to raise the money and you're going to throw down $40, $50 million as a down payment, they just don't fit my model anymore. But it took me years to get beyond that. Now, my personal investments, will I bang out a 10 unit deal if I think I can make $1 million, $2 million in a couple of years, either net worth or I refinance or whatever? Absolutely. I'll never say no to money because I understand this business is valuable.
All right. This one's from Tracy. She wants to know, what challenges have you faced while buying apartments and how did you overcome them?
The biggest challenge when trying to buy an apartment is fear of getting it wrong. For me, I actually need to believe in the property first. I'm like, all right, this deal's got to make money, right? Because I got to convince a bunch of people that it's serious. So other than that, man, my biggest fear is letting down my investors, letting down myself, letting down my family, letting down any bankers. That's probably the only concern, because multifamily real estate is calculated. There's income, there's expenses, there's NOI, and then you have your cap rate. And then other than that, you have a bank and or a lender who's going to lend you that portion, like the debt. And then you have whatever that they say they're going to lend. So if it's 65%, 60%, 70%, then you just have to go get the rest of the equity. That's a number that you can calculate in your mind. The only other piece of it that will ever give you doubt is lack of confidence and or fear of failure.
So this one is from Patricia. Patricia says, can you just give us a few strategies that you employ to negotiate the best deal when you bought your apartment complexes?
Yes. So I told them that I love the property. That is the number one thing. Most people are like, yeah, you know, I saw the property and what's the least amount you can take for it? And why are they selling? Why are they selling? They try to beat the property up. And what I do is the number one strategy to get a deal, even from a broker. It's like, hey, I love the deal. It's the perfect size for me. I saw it already. You don't have to see the property to see the property, guys. Like, you could see the property online and be like, hey, I love the property. I saw it. I already ran my numbers. And if you guys are in Dave's group, you guys understand how to run basic numbers. You can find rents online. You can run your back of napkin math and you can get an idea. So that's what I do. First, I love the deal. I love the location. I saw the property. However, I saw it. I've already run my numbers and I'm in a range of X. Is that about where you guys are in the range of? If there's a price, because it's a smaller deal, you're like, hey, that's a perfect price. Even if it's not the perfect price, never tell someone their babies are ugly, right?
So like, no one likes that. No one likes that.
No one likes that.
So even if their baby is ugly, they don't want to hear.
Yeah. It could be ball patches. Just be like, wow, your baby's cute. Like, that's how you have to treat your real estate. So that lets people say, ooh, you know what? That's great, because everyone else is out there trying to beat their properties up. So that's how I actually get callbacks. That's how I get people to like me. That's how I get people to be open to me, because I'll figure all the rest out later. But it's like the first date phenomenon. Don't go on a first date complaining about the date. It would seem to be second nature. Then the rest of it happens, right? Because then you go, hey, I love the property. What are your thoughts? I literally just had this conversation on a 370 unit deal right before I got on this. The broker called and he was talking to me about it. And I was like, hey, I love the property. Already kind of run some preliminary numbers. I haven't even dug into the deal room yet, which are where the financials are. But if I can get down there and see the property, I will, like, boots on the ground, because he knows I'm here. And I was like, how did you guys size the debt? Because I know this is a favorable time for debt, but how are you guys underwriting it? Because I want to try to do that if I can. Again, I'm trying to make what you want work. And then if I can't do that, it's not Victor saying no. Oh, the bank said no. Here's what we're going to need. So we move away from the real estate as it relates to that strategy, and we move into negotiation, influence, persuasion, getting people to like you, and also liking them. So that's how I do that. That's how I overcome. And that's the strategy that I use. It's not sexy, but it works.
I hope they wrote it down or go review it again, because that was some great advice that he just gave you guys. All right. This one's from Tunda. He's saying, hopefully I'm not repeating your question, but what was your biggest challenge finding your investors?
The biggest challenge finding my investors was judging the people that I knew. That was my biggest problem. So like, I tried to, they don't have any money. Don't do that. Just like, hey, I got a great deal and I'm looking for investors. Would you be interested in investing? Also, and I teach my team this, ask hard questions. Like, hey, how much money do you actually have? Right. And you're like, well, enough. Like, how much is enough? And then be quiet. So like, first, don't judge them. And two, if you are going to judge them based on the truth. It's way easier to be like, hey, how liquid are you? And I'm like, oh, you know, it depends. It shouldn't depend on how great of a deal is to how much capital you have. How much money do you have, man? Just tell me. But that's my personality. I got about 300. I'm like, okay, about 300 is what? 350, 325. I start asking harder questions and it starts drilling it down. They go, no, I got 3.25. I'm like, okay, well, I know you're not going to give anyone your last dollar. How much of that would you feel comfortable investing? And they're like, well, I'd probably be able to do 50. Oh, okay, I can't do 50. I got to do a minimum of 100. If you were to do 100, like, here's what I got. And then I start having that conversation. So that was the biggest challenge I had to answer your question. One, I judged them first, and you shouldn't. And then second, when I got over judging them, I never got clear on the exact amount of what they had, because those are two different numbers. How much do you have? And then how much will you invest? And once I got down to those two things, it was a lot easier for me to talk to people, because I got comfortable asking those questions.
So did it take time for you to get comfortable, or were you good at it right away? Were you asking those questions right away, or were you beating around the bush? Because I give you an example. Some people will beat around the bush. And like you said, the example you gave, oh, I have around 300, oh, I'm liquid. And they never get a number. And then they'll ask that person, will you invest in my deal? When the time comes, they go, oh, well, really, I don't have that kind of money. You know what I mean? So yeah. Were you comfortable, or did you have to work your way into doing that because you got burnt a couple of times?
What it was for me was that I was already comfortable. And the more I learned from a bunch of different people to say it like this, say it like this, say it like this, it pulled me away from a natural conversation that I'm comfortable having. So what I had to do was really unlearn things to get comfortable again. I failed so much trying to say it as a script or the way that somebody else is telling me to say it, that I finally got frustrated enough to be like, dude, I don't care. I'm just going to be myself. And if they don't like it, then they shouldn't invest with me anyways, because I'm going to be the one doing the work. And that actually let people come into my world as opposed to me trying to enter their world with them. We all know this, right? We're like, well, I have an opportunity for you at such and such percent. Who do you know who would be interested in investing? That's a great entry if you're in a room full of people. But sometimes it's just like, hey, man, I got an opportunity. I'm just looking for investors. Man, if you guys are interested, let me know. I'd love to talk to you about it. And then somebody be like, yeah, I'm interested in that. I'm like, cool. How much money do you have? What were you thinking? And then just be quiet. That is a natural thing for me. So to your point, if you go back to just being natural, first off, most of the people that you talk to, they don't have a money problem. Just assume the fact that there's so much money on planet Earth. No one has a money problem. There's money everywhere. the sooner you can get to a money conversation with people, the more they actually respect you. Because right now, I teach this in my programs. I'm like, everyone is in this phase of distrust. So if you take responsibility for their lack of trust and for their trust, then you'll be okay. So I feel like you already don't trust me. So if I go, hey, let's go to Starbucks, let's go to lunch, let's do this, let me pick your brain, let's blah, blah, blah. At some point in the back of their head, they're like, man, what does this guy want? I'm like, man, let's just get that out of the way now. I actually want you to be an investor. I know it's a good thing for you. If you have money sitting in the bank and I got a great deal, or you can invest in my fund, man, let's talk about that. But let's build our relationship off of an investment opportunity first and become friends. But most people try to do that, which is to your point, which is where I had to kind of get over that, because they were like, yeah, be friends first, do this, and then build a business relationship. But that's not how I am. So I went back to just my core roots of like, man, I just want to do deals. People who want to do deals and value me for that. And I've had great investors because of it. So I hope that answers the question. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. It absolutely answers the question. So I hope you guys are listening. If you haven't listened to that, you want to go back and watch the replay. It's actually on Facebook Live. So, all right. Carol has another question. She wants to know, do you manage the properties in Honolulu yourself, or do you have a manager for those units?
The ones that we did in Honolulu, I actually put together my own management team. So we self-managed. We had contractors, we had maintenance people, accounting, bookkeeping, and all that other stuff. I put together my own team and we self-managed our properties for the portfolio that I put together for me and my investors. But now we're going to use Graystar for anything that's over the 100 plus units. And then there's another local company that we're going to use, South Coast, but we're going to use them for anything under 100 units for the deals that we're getting for the fund. So you still need to manage the manager, because again, they're your partners, right? To answer your question, for your smaller deals, deals in Hawaii, we self-manage, but I oversaw the team that I put together.
This one's from David. David wants to know, Victor, how much priority do you put on emerging market predictions versus what you see and your gut feeling?
Emerging markets are very important. We're talking about Victor's investment thesis, guys, my strategy. I personally don't focus on emerging markets. Reason why is because I am a big firm believer, because I got hammered back in the day and I started focusing on my own backyard. So what I started doing was like, hey, I'm going to focus on the emerging environments in my own area, because one, as an investor, I can get to them. Two, I have a real estate fund and I raise capital from investors nationally. And I want them to feel comfortable to say, hey, we have a guy that's boots on the ground that can be there for investment opportunities. He knows the market. So emerging markets to me are good if you can get in at the right time, like Dave teaches. I've always missed those windows. They've always opened and shut on me because I'm stubborn. And be honest with you, I like being where money is already, right? So typically when I think through emerging markets, I think through, hey, look, there's a great opportunity for jobs to come there, which means industrial environments, office buildings and stuff, there's vacancies, there's a low barrier to entry for those businesses to move people. So while they're buying in this lower price product and filling that space, they're bringing in the tenant base with them, which are their employees. And those employees are really not absorbing the good stuff that you want. Well, they're absorbing the good stuff you actually want and pushing out the locals to the lower price stuff, which is causing a raise in the rents, which is why people go, hey, we're going to buy a C-class property in the middle of nowhere. And look at the money, look at the money, look at the money. But when you take a look at where that money came from, let's say California, New York, they all rush to Florida. California rushes to Texas and Arizona, all the things over. When the market shifts, and you guys look backwards on this with me, that money retracts and goes back to where it came from, right? And then when that money comes back, they go, they have to buy their properties at a higher price because Victor came there. And then I exit, I make a little bit of money, I start buying their stuff. And then when the market goes back up, buyer's market phase two, seller's market phase one, people who are antsy make money and they rush back to those markets again. And then they leave all their other property unattended. And when those markets boom and bust, they have to come back. And guys like me that stayed firm, I'm going to keep buying. I'm going to keep raising money. I'm going to keep buying. And I just buy all the stuff they have to leave because they need more money. So it's a good strategy. I don't put a lot of energy into emerging markets. It's a lot of work to do that. But you guys have a different network than I have. You guys have each other. And I'm back into connecting with you guys too. So if you are not in an emerging market, which is what I talk about being boots on the ground, man, partner with someone who is. It's a valuable thing. And then it's just being able to time where your next emerging market's going to be. So I personally believe in boots on the ground and find the emerging environment inside of your own market that allows you to actually have confidence out there when you're buying.
all the students and the clients that we have, when I talk to them, I always tell them, man, don't just ignore your backyard. I'll say, what are your three markets? And they'll be like in a really good market or a really good area, or even in something that's land. And I go, still look in your backyard, because you just never know
what you'll find
in your backyard.
And I can share this with you guys, why you should look in your own backyard, because I know most people don't, because they go, oh, it's too expensive. But I want to share something with you. Let's say you get a property, even in this market climate, all right? And let's say on the average, just for this conversation, let's say it's a 40-unit apartment building. If you think you're going to raise rents on 40 units about $600 over the next 5 years, it's about $100 a year initially raising. If you just passively do it, that's not including at the time when you buy, there's a little bit of discrepancy between rents. So that's 600 times 40 units, $240,000 a month times 12 months. We'll just keep it simple, 5 years. Over an increase of 5 years, $280,000. If you're in a low cap rate environment like we are, divided by 0.05, that's $5.7 million worth of increased value you've created over and above your purchase price. So for a lot of you guys avoiding your own market because the cap rates are 5 and 4, things like that, yes, that's how these other people you see, like, how are they making money? How are they cash flowing? They're betting on the fact that they can go in and raise rents because they're in an environment where the cap rate, then that raise, that rent bump is tacking on millions of dollars. And they're just going to go back to, let's say they can only get out of that 5.7, let's say they only get 20, 30% of that. That's huge. It's like $1.5 million that they're pulling out in new value, not including pulling out their down payment. So they just do that, make $1 million every couple of years, because they can do it in less than five. I've just said 5 years. If you were passive about it, you say, yeah, we'll do it whenever people move. But 40 units is not a huge deal. 40 units, you might not even have a swimming pool.
That's not a big deal. That's not a huge deal. So anybody can do that. So,
but that said, to your point, like, the only reason why people don't look in their backyard, they think it's too expensive or they think it's too competitive. Sometimes you just have to look at something, go, look, if we think we can raise rents or that location will give me the rent bumps that we need and we can justify it over the next 5 to 7 years, and we can bump rents at a base of like $500 to $600, let's look at that and just see what's possible.
Perfect. So we got about 8 more minutes for this call. So we got 2 more questions.
Let's do it.
So this one's from Beth. She says, when you have garages, trash, pet, et cetera, I think she's talking about other income that are value add and rented out. Do you make that part of your total rent on leases to avoid the bank throwing out income because it's over 10% when you go to sell the property?
Well, that goes with your underwriting. So typically on anything, I usually underwrite anywhere from 3 to 5% on additional income over my gross. So that's a great question. I've not had to do that. People understand that is a part of your gross income, right? Like, just so far as the revenue of your property. And it really just depends on your lender. So for that, I would probably ask, like, hey, I'm underwriting this way. I underwrote it with it. I underwrote it without it. I underwrote it this way. And then they'll value that. They'll be like, okay, we underwrite it for this, but we'll give you credit for it. And sometimes as an owner, you just need to know that the way that you underwrite as an owner may be different than the banking. So you're probably going to have 3 to 4 different underwritings. You just know that's where it's going to be. Give yourself credit for it.
And the last question, Victor, is from Robert. He wants to know, how did you find your investors? What are some places that we can look for investors?
Sure. So, like, again, groups like this, groups like you're in right now, that's a great place. Everyone says go to your REIT groups, but the best investors are typically going to be in businesses. Talk about earlier, man. If you go to like a meetup group that's for businesses, people who are marketing, sales, or they want to scale their businesses, usually people want to scale, they don't have time to do real estate. And they're going to look at you as an actual additive to their world, as opposed to if you go to just some base, hey, I'm a real estate investor and I want to learn. You're going to get a JV partner who also does that. So you can do that. You can do friends, family. You can syndicate a deal, start your own fund. Just get out there, use your social media. That's one of the big goals I have. I want to be one of the top crowdfunders on social media, and we're working towards that. So those are the biggest things. The other thing, call hard money lenders and mortgage companies, because they only do loans to investors. And just call them and be like, hey, who do you know that's one of your top investors? This is what I did. It's how I got started. That you think you can partner me up with? I go find the deals and they fog the mirrors for me. I actually said it like that. I was like, who do you think? If I find the deal, you guys fog the mirror and we partner and I'll split profit with you guys, would you do that? And they're like, yeah, come on in. So that's another way to do it. Don't negate those things. And another thing that you can do, because, and I'm sharing with you guys what I like to do, that you guys know how to underwrite multifamily deals. go to hard money lending offices around where you live at and sit down with them and go, look, this is the underwriting template I use to underwrite deals. If you want, I can put together a training on how to get money from you guys if you are a multifamily lender. And that's basics, right? Know your numbers, 70% or below LTV. Let them know that you want to teach people how to better use their money, and then they will start referencing you to other people. So I just try to help people like that. So I find a lot of investors who are like, man, we like what you do, or hey, you helped us, or worse, I throw up on them and they go, man, we don't want to do all that stuff. You do it. Here's the money. So that's a great way to find investors, guys, big time.
Victor, you have been a blessing, my friend. Truly, truly appreciate you. You gave us some really good advice today. So once again, how can people reach you?
They can find me on Facebook. You can go to Victor Bell or Victor Bell Jr., which is the personal one. You can go to Instagram, which is The Real Victor Bell. You can go to YouTube. I guess if you Google Victor Bell or at Bell Capital on YouTube, or you can just Google Victor Bell Real Estate and I will pop up. If you see my picture, I'm not the other two guys. So, or you can Google Victor Bell, Bell Capital. I should be found. Or you can go to bell-capital.com. That's our investor site. But man, thank you so much for having me, guys. Thank you so much for having me here. Thank you guys for being successful. I really appreciate it. I wish I had information, more information like this when I got started. I'd already had that $1 billion worth of real estate, but we're tracking.
So Victor will be at Ultimate Partnering this year in September. So if you see him, if you're going to Ultimate Partnering, if you're not, shame on you. But if you are attending, make sure you go up to Victor, tell him that you like the podcast, shake his hand, chop it up with him. So that's what Ultimate Partnering is all about. So thank you once again, Victor. Until next week, everybody else, have a good week. Enjoy. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.